Wayne, Brandon, lucky to have you guys here in studio. It's lucky to have Ariston, the brand, and the representatives of the brand in studio with me. It's lucky to have you guys back. Done a podcast with Alistair, your marketing manager, quite a few years ago on another podcast that had only the audio element to it. So it's good to see the faces now, and we'll a little bit later on do a product demonstration as well. So welcome.
Thank you, Willem. Yeah.
Thanks for hosting us.
Yeah. Lekker. Incredible little studio. Brilliant. Wonderful.
Yeah. It's all for the plumbers. It's all for the plumbers.
Absolutely. Yeah. Everything we do is for the plumbers.
So, Wayne, it's Lekker. I don't think even there is a need to introduce the brand to the products, but we are going to do that. The fact is that Ariston has established itself very well in the South African market as a trusted, both a product provider and a service provider. A trusted brand, well-known brand, and you know what it does for the plumbing industry and for the consumers out there. And we're going to touch on it later on, even the economy in a way. Very interesting point that's coming up in our conversation. The fact is that it's providing more homes in South Africa access to advanced sustainable solutions, and those solutions use less energy and less effort. Yeah. But just for those of our plumbers, our viewers and our listeners who are not yet that familiar with the brand, Wayne or Brandon, whoever, just a quick recap of who and what Ariston actually is.
Oh, thank you, Willem. My absolute pleasure to be here today. And I think a quick synopsis of who we are as a brand, I think, is really important. I think like all good entrepreneurial stories, it all starts with a person with a vision, right?
Yeah.
In this case, it was a man in Italy, in an area called the Marche region, beautiful countryside area of Italy. And Mr. Aristide Maloney founded Ariston back in 1930. So not so recent. Yay. And we'll be celebrating, of course, our 100th anniversary in 2030. And we have quite an extensive ESG program around the roadmap to 2030 when our company turns 100. So Mr. Maloney, just very briefly about him, fascinating man, fascinating family, in fact, because today our executive chairman is actually the grandson of Mr. Maloney, who founded the company. So he's still the majority shareholder as well. So very strong lineage in terms of family heritage, if I can call it that. So in the late 1920s, as I'm sure you know, the world was a tough place, you know, the Great Depression, and that decade was really, really difficult. And Mr. Maloney found himself in quite a tight spot. Yeah, employment-wise, you know, the company that he was working for at the time wasn't doing too well. And lo and behold, he found himself looking for something gainful to do. He was a qualified draftsman by profession, and he was having a discussion with the local priest in the Catholic Church in Fabriano, the area where he was born, which is part of the Marche region. And he said to the priest, look, I'm in a bit of a bind, but I've got an idea. You know, I really think I can go into business for myself. And I think, Willem, to summarize it, probably a great example of socialism, at least the kind of socialism that I can buy into, is the fact that what happened was the priest said to him, I'll tell you what, we as the Catholic parish in this area will sponsor you financially to get off the ground. But there's only one caveat, one thing you need to do for us, and you need to ensure that you hire people from our community. And Aristide Maloney was like, fantastic. Of course, that's wonderful. You know, Italians are very regionalized in many cases. So for him to do that was an incredible thing. And to get the sponsorship and the leg up that he needed from the Catholic Church, of course, helped as well. So an interesting kind of socialism. It probably had its purest form, right, in terms of starting an organization. Then lo and behold, he started off with scales, weighing products. Scales.
Well, that's interesting. So that's quite interesting. Know that.
So it wasn't water heating initially. So even though that's the foundation of who we are today, it was actually weighing scales that he started with. And then he branched out into gas cylinders. He even did kitchen furniture at one point, very successful with that. And in 1960, Ariston as a brand was born because he saw the opportunity for electric water heaters. So 1960 Ariston, which I think you can see where the name comes from. Uh-huh. It actually comes from his first name, Aristide, became a brand and today is a powerhouse in water heating and spatial heating as well.
And that's globally.
That's globally.
That's not just in South Africa. That's globally.
Correct. And I think if you look at Ariston today as a global brand, you know, we've got three strategic global brands that we run. Ariston, of course, being one of them, which is a specialist expertise in renewable and sustainable products. And then we have Alco, which is a European high-end brand, which really is a turnkey solution brand for everything from conceptualization of a project all the way through to the after sales and looking after the customer experience right at the final step. So that's a very, very high-end brand. And then we've got Wolf, which I think is the correct pronunciation for a German brand, Wolf.
How's it spelled?
W-O-L-F.
Really? Wolf. Yeah.
Wolf.
As in the Afrikaans word, Wolf, yeah, or English absolutely. Word, Wolf.
Yeah.
Wolf.
Yeah. So that's a company that Ariston actually purchased a couple of years ago, did an acquisition, a major, major acquisition of the holding company. And essentially, they're an indoor climate control specialist, handling everything from air handling to ventilation, et cetera.
Yeah. Mm.
So those are the three key strategic brands that the group has. There's many other regional brands, and Willem, you'll be very familiar with the old Heattech geysers. It was also a regional strategic brand for us many years ago, up until the point that Ariston decided, quite rightly, that we should leverage off the Ariston brand in South Africa. Mm. But in some of the other markets, like Mexico, we're a market leader with a brand called Calorex. So through an acquisition that was made a couple of years ago.
And have you rebranded that as well?
No,
as
we've decided
as
not
you
to.
Did with Heattech?
No, we decided not to, Willem. A great question. I think in some markets, the brands are so established and so strong that it's best to leave them as they are. You know, Heattech was a little bit different because, it hadn't been around for too long. Even though it had a great name in the market, the decision was to rather go the Ariston route because we would need to import a lot of the Ariston products from other factories as well as part of our evolution in terms of bringing water heating that is suitable for our markets. Mm. So we couldn't do that under the Heattech brand. That didn't make sense because Ariston is a specialist in those product typologies. Yeah. So I thought that was quite a good move. And we have other regional brands around the world as well. Like in India, we've got Rackold, which is a very well-established, venerated brand in India. So we won't change that for now. And there's numerous other ones. I mean, we've got a Israeli company called Chromagen, who was also acquired by Ariston not too long ago. And they've got a subsidiary down in Australia as well. Obviously, like South Africa, a lot of good sunshine. So perfect for renewable product. And that really is where we are as a company. But I think what's fascinating about Ariston is that in 1979, first of all, let me go back one step. Mr. Maloney, the founder, passed away in 1970, and his son, Francesco Maloney, took over the business, what eventually became Ariston as we know it today. And in 1979, we did the first social report in Europe, one of the first companies to issue a social report instead of just looking at financial numbers, which is quite interesting. And that speaks a lot to who we are as a company. Because in that report, there was a lot about sustainability, making sure that we provide for the community, making sure that we provide products that are good, of good quality, and of course, sustainable as well for the consumer. So that's quite early if you consider where we are today, with a lot of companies having their own ESG projects, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was almost as if back then, there wasn't as much focus on it as it is today, yet Ariston did that in a time where it wasn't such a big thing. You know, today it's a big thing. Sustainability is like everybody's looking for a sustainable solution. And back then it wasn't, we weren't in the energy crisis that we are today
100%.
Back then in the 70s. So that's awesome to hear that they already started that initiative and that way of thinking was already there.
Yep. Mm. More recently, in 2018, for the first time ever, we also sort of reported on non-financial performance indicators, such as, again, sustainability indicators. So it shows that in our DNA as a company, it's a very strong theme, which is very good. In 2021, we listed on the Milan Stock Exchange, the euro next to a bourse, and it was a big focus there as well in presenting to the investors what our plans were for our ESG programs till 2030. So I think as a group, very strong focus on environmental, social, and governance perspectives. And I think that's really good for everybody in the value chain, of course, as well.
But we're speaking of the brand. We're speaking of its values and the standards and what makes it stand out and the interesting aspects of it and factors of it. But let's talk about a little bit of the products.
Yep.
I mean, let's talk about the solutions that you have. I mean,
sure,
we mentioned the word Heattech, and that refers to geysers. Everybody knew Heattech as geysers. And it's typical as we are as South Africans, but I hear now that you say it was the same in Mexico with that established brand that people tend to not want to change. There's a resistance to change.
Yeah.
So if a brand takes over another brand, and for the better, not necessarily for the worse, but for the better,
yes,
and for improvement and for growth and development on it, they are going to be people who resist that because they're so familiar and they trust the brand that they know, and now there's this big change and why is it necessary for this big change?
Yeah.
But boiling back to the fact HiTech was Giza's, Ariston has rebranded it in South Africa, despite the resistance of for change, and I think it's done well to establish itself again as a respected and a trusted brand. But take us through the range of products that...
Great question. I think, Willem, I think maybe to answer it, I think it's important to understand the scale that Ariston brings to the marketplace itself. Mm. So a little bit about, you know, some more of the numbers, you know, we've got to bring the numbers in, right?
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
You know, if you look at Ariston as a global player, you know, we well represented directly in 40 countries globally.
Mm.
And we also distribute through distribution partners to about 160 plus countries globally.
Sure.
So our products can be found everywhere. In fact, we have a lot of our colleagues who travel, you know, the Europeans they're quite lucky because they can travel, you know, quite extensively, you know, to some places that aren't too far for them, not like South Africa, you know. and often we get like, you know, on social media, we'll see somebody post like, hey, I discovered one of our products in a far-flung country in the world somewhere, you know. So there's an Ariston product essentially in every single country, really, you know, and we're very proud of that. I think from a manufacturing point of view, we have a very, very strong industrial footprint. We've got 28 production sites in 17 countries globally,
sure,
which is quite extensive. So
28, which means that in some countries there are multiple production sites.
Correct, correct.
But there's one in South Africa as well.
Correct, yeah, yes. Centurion, yeah. And we also have 28 centers of competency or R&D. My colleague over here, Brandon, is leading our R&D facility in Centurion at our production sites as well.
I'm in presence of greatness here. I've got the country director of Ariston here, but I've also got the research and development engineer, and then you also said the person who also does the testing and stuff with your project. So welcome.
Yeah, well, I feel great. Absolutely. Man. When I joined the company, I was a sales manager initially, and you know, I didn't pay too much attention to this side of the business. I just needed a product, you know, and I've come to understand what Brandon does on a regular basis. It's really incredible. Mm. It's so important in a market like ours because having that expertise within Ariston, but also being able to translate that into a local level of expertise into the local conditions for us is super critical. So
our conditions are so different. You know, the closest that we can most probably get is Australia because, you know, the environment is so much the same as what South Africa is. But each country has its own, you know, they've got their own social mindsets of people and they've got their own social heart sets of people. But then at the same time, they've got their conditions, their climate conditions, you know, the conditions, their rules and their regulations and the laws and the standards that need to be complied with. So all of that needs to be taken into consideration when you develop a product for a country.
Absolutely. Yeah, you know, if I can speak to that, you know, when I joined Ariston, the thinking was that, you know, a Giza is a Giza. Well, what do you improve on it? But you realize the actual competence that's out there in our centers. And it's so advanced that we can bring through and leverage the technologies from other countries into the product design in South Africa. So understand the South African market and bring through the knowledge from the different markets into what we offer today.
Absolutely. I think I mentioned to you briefly off air, you know, if you look at the capacity of geysers globally is linked to two factors normally. And this is through the data that the group has as well. And the fact that we have those production facilities in so many different countries is that normally, the size of a water heater is linked to where you are on the lines of latitude on Earth, as well as the relative wealth of the country itself.
Yes.
So let's give a quick example of that. West Africa, our Nigeria subsidiary, as an example, small capacity geysers are more popular because it's a very hot, humid country, closer to the tropics. But also, relatively speaking, the people on average are relatively poorer than some other places on Earth. Saudi Arabia is the opposite again. They don't need a lot of hot water, right? It's a very warm, hot country, but it's a very wealthy country per GDP capita. And the most popular size there is a 300 liter.
Mm.
So 10 times the capacity versus a country like Nigeria. So very interesting. You know, and I think Ariston, the beauty of what we do is the fact that we are so in step with what the market's requirements are.
Mm.
That is the beauty of Ariston. So a lot of our competitors have branched out into ventilation, HVAC, and home appliances as an example. Nothing wrong with that. It's just that we're a true global specialist. and one of the few remaining companies that focuses solely on water heating and heating, which is spatial heating as well. And I think that's the beauty of who we are.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I think especially here in South Africa, going back to what the needs, you mentioned Saudi Arabia, as
yes,
right? And how their needs and what they can afford is completely different to what it is from South Africa.
Yeah.
Yes, you mentioned West Nigeria, West Africa, but specifically South Africa. I mean, we've got challenges in our country.
Yeah.
And electricity and energy is one of the major big concerns because that affects just about, it's almost as similar to the petrol price.
Yeah.
You know, it affects the cost of everything.
Yeah. Mm.
And the same for energy and the consumption of energy or the lack of production of energy or the saving of energy, it impacts everything. It impacts our social environment. It impacts our economy financially, the growth of our country's economy.
Yeah.
It has such a tremendous, tremendously big impact. And we hardly ever think of, you know, what kind of off-air again when we spoke, as we said, there's not a one-stop solution. It's not going to be one organization, one company, or one government division like Eskom, the energy provider. It's not going to be one entity that's going to provide a solution.
Yes.
To you know, the crisis that we sit with and the challenges that we face here in South Africa. There has to be the private sector. There has to be the Aristons that come up with solutions and products that use less energy, that's more sustainable, that offers a part of the solution to the bigger problem that we have. And obviously that has to be taken into considerations. And hence we're having this conversation today.
Absolutely.
I mean, we're focusing at the fact that besides the typical geysers that hangs on a wall or sits in a roof cavity. There's also your decentralized, and I know that we're not going to focus on that, but that's part of the solutions that you provide. You provide your 30 liters, you know, your under zinc type of things. Like, tell us a slight bit more about that before we get to the real.
You're full of great observations today. So I mean, excuse me. I think really, really, I'm glad that you brought that up. I know we weren't going to touch on it too much today, but I think it's important because, as you say, we have challenges in our country which really are opportunities as well for not only ourselves but for society at large. So in the case of the products that we've brought in over the last few years, they address all the different needs that our society really has at scale. I mean, solar water heating, last year we launched a brand new product called Kairos, the range, and really it's suitable for obviously the renewable sector. Very flexible product as well, so it allows for some flexibility for the installer to source things like the lagging, etc. I don't want to go into too much of the commercial technical aspects, but I think it's very important to sell product that is going to be suitable in terms of it's an investment, right? So I mean, if you're buying a solar system, you want something that's going to last for a long, long time.
Yeah, it has to have ROI, a return on investment.
Correct. So it's a huge investment. The capital cost outlay is normally quite large, and you get the benefits from day one. So in our case, looking at the core of our business being electric storage water heaters, we've also made the decision over the years to bring in the 10, 15, 30 liter point of use.
Yes.
So now you utilize that at the point of where the tap is. For instance, a kitchen basin might be a really good example, right? So or the kitchen sink, where basically instead of wasting all that red water coming from the primary geyser from the other side of the house, you now get instant water heating capability at a tap itself. We've also launched a product out of Vietnam, one of the factories we have in the group, which is an electric instant water heater called Auras, and we have an extensive range of those. And from an affordability perspective, I think that product really hits the sweet spot for a lot of consumers who are looking for an alternative product. Mm. Not necessarily to replace a 150-liter geyser.
Yeah.
This is because a supplementary product at a different point of use.
Yeah. Mm. I mean, it's there's a place for and a place and a need for everything, but that, again, it contributes to what you can save and where do you need what type of consuming what capacity you need in which scenario for that matter. We had a conversation about, I think it was a hostel residence for students that you said that had a complete when it was initially developed, the type of solution that they had for water heating was when Ariston, by the time they showed up, What was that again?
Yeah, let me tell you about that. I think it's really interesting because it speaks to the fact that we need to do a lot around education. And I know the likes of yourselves and some of the other industry bodies are doing a lot around training and upskilling of plumbers. And we stand for the professionals, you know. Why? Because at the end of the day, we need to supply the right product to the right person or the right installation. In this case, it was in Soweto where there's a lot of student accommodation being built. A lot of backyard accommodation being built. And somebody called us and said, do you have a solution for us other than a 150-liter geyser? So we went on site, and our person that runs the Soweto area from a sales perspective called me and said, you're not going to believe this, but there's about 20 of these 150-liter geysers that have been installed, and they've all been switched off by the students that live in those units.
Because it's too expensive to
just too expensive to run. So it got us thinking like, but why was that spec'd in the first place? Because the next question is how many people were living in those little units? And basically it wasn't more than two. In some cases, there was a single person residing in there for 150-liter geyser.
Yo.
You know, running a 3 kilowatts output at peak is crazy. So actually what happened was they started switching off the geysers going, we just can't afford it. And that's a sad reality of where we are today.
So they're interested in pricing. There was a property developer who said, okay, we're going to install this at this cost and this price. And then meantime, 2 years later or a year perhaps later, it's not being used. It sits there in the roof cavity or hangs on the wall like a white elephant because of the cost. And it's all because whoever was the person who could have provided a different solution, a more effective solution, and a more suitable solution, either wasn't properly informed and didn't have the knowledge about the kind of products that Ariston has to offer and the kind of solutions that maybe didn't care. Let's not go that
way. Well, I like to say that everybody, all of us have like, you know, we've got a factory setting, you know, a default factory setting. So if you push people and the people – so we all gravitate to what we're comfortable with, you know. And that little factory setting, unfortunately, in South Africa, in the geyser space, is exactly that. It's 150-liter geyser.
Sure.
And there is a place for it. Don't get me wrong. That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying that we are leading the evolution in bringing products that are more suitable for different applications. The challenges we have in this country are enormous. We all know that, whether it's water or electricity, the general infrastructure scenario is quite tough and will continue to be for a while still. But we have the solutions in our space that we can influence people to get the right product that's appropriate from a cost point of view, efficiency point of view. And Ariston, as I said, is a market leader. The Ariston brand itself is all about sustainability and high efficiency product.
It's in your slogan. It's right there behind you, the home of sustainable comfort.
I'm glad you brought that up. You know, because if you look at the corporate logo, the little icon is a house.
Yes.
You know, so we are the home of sustainable comfort.
Yeah.
It's becoming more and more topical in this country, you know. South Africa maybe has lagged a little bit behind the rest of the world. In again, you can't generalize. But I think what Brandon will talk about in a second about the Geyser Connect is a great example of how, like you said as well, Willem, the private sector can play a huge part in
absolutely
providing an evolutionary stage in terms of how water gets heated in this country.
Yeah. But talking about the Geyser Connect, this is now the main topic actually of what we're discussing today. And that's actually very interesting and very lacquer because, like Wayne said, number one, it's part of the contribution to the solution to the crisis that and the circumstances that we sit with in our country. But the fact is, Brandon, is that we're way past the beginning or the inception of the fourth industrial revolution. I mean, we are progressing into the fourth industrial revolution at an accelerated pace. So it's all about technology these days. I mean, it's no longer about the huge, massive machines and what they can do as it was 50, 60 years ago. Now it's about how smart we can manage those huge machines or the stuff that heats our water and stuff like that. So if you don't mind, Brandon, what can be said and how does something like geysers and smart technology actually work together? And how can that contribute to the solutions that we are looking for in South Africa?
Okay. So just a small anecdote maybe. When I joined the company, somebody wants to ask me, can you make a Wi-Fi geyser? And I was like, a Wi-Fi geyser? Really? A Wi-Fi geyser? And, you know, over the evolution of appliances, if you look at it, now you have air cons that have Wi-Fi, you have washing machines that work off a phone. I think the appliance industry is gravitating towards the Internet of Things. So when we started this project of collaborating with Geyser Connect, we were able to develop this system, which essentially is an electronic thermostat. So this electronic thermostat would essentially replace your mechanical thermostat. And it's a way to manage your water heater in terms of the set point and your energy consumption. So it's really a good device that connects with Wi-Fi or LTE and enables the end user to control his product to his desired usage.
But why? I mean, the question is why? Why would somebody approach you and say, can you make a Wi-Fi geyser or geyser, you know, be compatible with Wi-Fi? Why would something like that? I mean, we're talking about plumbing. We're talking about geysers that sit in a roof cavity. There, most people never even think of it unless there's no hot water.
Well, I guess, you know, Willem, I think Winston Churchill apparently was accredited with this quote where he said, you know, never let a good crisis go to waste. You
know, it's an opportunity.
It's an opportunity, yeah. So there's some deliberation whether he actually said that. And he had many great other sayings as well. But I think in the case of South Africa, and your question is so pertinent, because what is driving this? Why would a company like ourselves look at this? And Arison is not new to connected products. I mean, we have a department running connectivity. We have many products in Europe that are connected already where we can get data and we can help the consumer to save money. Locally, though, we needed to take a local approach with sensor networks, having the relevant expertise locally when it came, because they're a leader in their space around connected products. Not only do they manufacture a connected geyser offering, they do your typical light bulb, connected light bulbs, other power home energy management like connected switches, etc. as well. So they're very much an expert in their field. For us, it was about trying to assist the consumer ultimately. So there may be two aspects, consumer and then, of course, at macro level, how can we help government in their projects as well? I'll come to that in a second. But for the consumer itself, we know that the price of electricity, you know, over the last 25 years has increased four times more than inflation. We were talking off air, you know, it's a question of, you know, do I buy that expensive coffee now, you know, or that cup of coffee at Starbucks, or do I, you know, heat my water at night? And unfortunately, it's becoming a reality that energy poverty might become more widespread in the country because people really at the margins, who are living at the margins, have got a choice at night. You know, you and I maybe, and the three of us, are fortunate because we can look at a monthly budget that we set up for ourselves, for our households, you know, the normal monthly budgets, what we're going to spend our money on. The reality is that if you look at predominantly, again, you can't generalize, but if you look in the townships, for argument's sake, people there have a daily budget. There's millions of survivalist businesses as well where people try to eke a living out every day.
Yeah.
Their budget is not a monthly budget. It's literally a daily budget.
Yeah.
So coming to electricity pricing, for the average person to go home at night and say, do I use electricity tonight or do I buy a loaf of bread, is a reality that a lot of us don't understand. And I go back to what Aristide Maloney said back in the 1967, and he said, you know, there's no point in any, you know, economic success in an industrial initiative without an equal outlook on, you know, driving social progress. Tembisa last month, there were social protests, there were uprisings, there were civil unrest around the price of electricity. I hope it doesn't become more widespread, but I hope at the same time that we do take it seriously because we cannot expect people, the poorest of the poor, to pay more and more every single year for less. As well. So I do feel that there is that part of it as well. You know, as a country, we need to address the energy crisis. People think it's over. You know, load shedding is now reduced.
Yes, exactly. It's tremendously reduced, and we're all thankful for that. But again, it boils down to the fact that we need to keep it there.
Correct. Yeah. Correct. So grid stability is the next challenge. And the Minister of Electricity, Minister Ramaphosa, has said, one of the things we can do is make behavioral changes as a society around how we heat water. He specifically mentions water, hot water. And we are ideally positioned to make that change with a product like the Geyser Connect, working with our beautiful Ariston Axios tanks. We can now give the control to somebody, whether it's the consumer. We can even provide control of a fleet of geysers or these assets that we deploy into the market to a power aggregator, to a power utility, to a municipality for argument's sake.
A plumbing service provider for that matter.
Absolutely. You know,
if they can offer that as part of their services and say, but listen, let us monitor it for you. And if we get little warnings on the application, and we'll get to the application just now, we can actually notify you and say, listen, hey, hang on. You need to reduce your consumption or it's overheating or whatever the case
may be. First notice of loss is valuable. It's like gold, right?
Yeah.
Whoever can get that first notice of loss that there's something wrong with the geyser is controlling a lot of data and a lot of valuable information as well. It's worth a lot to a plumbing company, as an example, who we could make this available to them to get that notice of loss and then basically to respond to a geyser issue, whether it's something electrical like the thermostat or the element that's maybe failed, or a leak, of course, as well, because the kit in one configuration comes with that leak sensor and leak detection. But for a consumer, let's get to the numbers. 40% saving on electricity is super possible. Through this device. Okay. So, I mean, if a typical household is spending, again, this will vary from house to house, but as a rule of thumb, the data we have, let's assume a 200-liter geyser is consuming or about 1,200 rands worth of electricity a month.
And 40% you say
40% is 460 rand a month. So it's substantial, significant savings over a year for a household. Imagine there's 5 million geysers in South Africa, which there are, 5.2 million apparently is the number. You start to look at that, it becomes super meaningful.
I mean, think of it just quickly. We're now in August month recording this podcast, but from the 1st of July, there was the tariff increase again, and it was a significant percentage of tariff increase from Eskom.
It's the municipal new financial year. Yeah. So,
and the National Energy Regulator have approved that high increase. But the fact is, as you said, there are some people who need to consider, do I buy a loaf of bread with the little money that I have today, or do I actually heat my geyser or make hot water to take a bath in? Yeah. That's the harsh reality, and it's very few people even think of it. But think quickly now. With the percentage of increase in tariff in July, it might be that some people's electricity bill now has gone up with 400 Rand. Mm. And if you can reduce it with a smart device, you make up for that, because our salaries doesn't necessarily go up with an extra 400 Rand. You know, our salaries don't go up. Yeah. So how do you manage that? How do you all of a sudden there's an extra 400-500 Rand on my electricity bill, but now there's a solution that you can install to reduce that and cover that 400 Rand increase.
Correct. And I think what's not known to many people is the new retail tariff plan that Eskom announced in April this year. So I think it's quite an issue for a lot of people, because there's a fixed component, a fixed cost that will be on the bill going forward. And that's why there were, you know, those protests in Tembisa. People were obviously fighting against the fact that for the fixed cost charge, which I think was 127 Rand, they weren't getting units out of that. You know, they weren't getting usable units.
It's a fixed cost just to have that connection to the grid.
Yeah, 100%. So any saving that can be passed on, especially in a product like this, which is a clear investment, because it's not a one-dimensional product. Yes, it addresses the energy consumption reduction, but it has a meaningful lifespan, you know, in the excess of 10 years. So over that period, if you quantify the saving, it's super valuable to whoever the installation owner is. I mean, currently there's 12,000 units installed in South Africa.
And that's with a quantity of 5 million geysers in the country, you know.
I mean, the annual savings currently is 55 million rand on electricity. So we're talking about 18 gigawatt hours of electricity savings, which is contributing towards helping the grid.
Exactly.
We want to scale this. That's why we've partnered with Sensor Networks, and we have Vodacom as a partner as well. I mean, Vodacom provides the LTE and the Wi-Fi connectivity for various reasons, and I think the most important ones are because Vodacom, of course, offers a very robust network with extensive coverage as well. So we need a reliable partner, even in those far-flung little areas that we all like to travel through, you know. This product needs to function and be connected.
And I think adding to that, you know, the product is quite robust in that it works with LTE, so it can work in any area. Yeah. It's quite a good, robust design. And, you know, the feedback that the customer would get on his behavior in terms of energy consumption, I think that's really where the power lies. I mean, typically a geyser is in your ceiling, and you see at the end of the month what your energy consumption is when it's too late.
You get that surprising.
And now you can see every hour what your consumption is.
Yeah.
And you can tailor your behavior to optimize your energy consumption.
Brandon, so this device, you said it's an electronic, thermostat, right?
Correct.
So that gets in, and we're going to do a product demonstration a little bit later on, physically showing the people what it looks like and how it connects to the geyser. So this goes into the geyser, attached to the geyser. Obviously, it needs then some kind of a SIM card or something that connects to internet.
Yep, correct.
You said LTE, 5G, all of those kind of things it can match. But then there's obviously something that needs to link back to where you monitor it, because you know, that sends information, it needs to send it somewhere. That's an application, I would assume.
Correct.
For a mobile phone, computer.
Correct. So this works with a Sensor Connect app. So when you power on the product, obviously it would connect to the LTE first, and that would connect to the cloud, the sensor network's cloud. And from that cloud, it would communicate through your phone via your Wi-Fi or LTE connection. And it is literally real-time feedback of everything, of alerts, whether there's a leakage, your energy consumptions, warnings. I mean, this is really a way where Geezer's talking to the end user.
Yeah.
And sure. We've never had that before.
Correct. Yeah, I mean, you're providing control back into the hands of the installation or the homeowner, basically. You know, I think that's super critical. Mm. Being able to control your spend on water heating for the first time effectively, to me, is really, really valuable to that homeowner.
But let's delve a little bit into that technical aspect, because I'm thinking to myself, all right, so I can monitor it. I can see when it spikes, when there's a consumption spike. What can I then do? Does this allow me to switch it off or reduce the temperature for that matter?
Yeah. So you can literally have a scheduled heating. So you can, for the entire week, you can set scheduled heating based on when you need it. You can do on-demand on and off. If you're going on a holiday and you want to switch it off, when you come back 2 hours before you arrive to the house, you can switch it on. You can adjust the set point temperature to what is comfortable to your shower. I think in addition to that, it gives you also feedback on, I think, over the entire month, you know, what was used in the household and how you can adjust that. Multiple features, I think also the kilowatt hours, you can see every hour, so you can see, you know, really real time.
I mean, currently think of your current geezer that's doesn't have a smart controller. You know, you're heating a lot of water. It's similar to, let me give you an analogy. It's like boiling a huge kettle just to have a small little espresso, a small little coffee. Mm-hmm. It's not really efficient.
Yes. Right?
You're burning through, you know, high kilowatts to deliver something very small. So currently during the day, your geezer's constantly heating because it's set at a certain set point temperature. Mm. But you're not using it all the time. So with this year, you could essentially schedule when you need to heat the geezer. Most of us, it's going to be, you know,
in the morning,
heating
or
up
the
to
evening.
6 o'clock in the morning as an example. And then in the evening again at a certain time frame. You can, of course, if you come home from the gym and you've decided to take a bit of a half day, as people do, you know, then you can heat now as well. There's a button that you can heat now. It will start to heat the geezer, so you have hot water quite soon. But I think changing those behavior patterns is a lot simpler than, you know, historically people would have to go to the DB and go, I'm switching my geezer off because I hear electricity is going up. That's not really effective.
That's what I do. Yep. That's what I do. Correct. I currently, that's how I try to manage my geezer demand. Consumption. Yeah. Yep. Because I switch it off. But now for the fact is I would switch it off in the morning when I leave, and then 8-9 hours later when I arrive back home, I would switch it on. But now it's lost that heat. Mm. You know, so many, I mean, how many degrees of Celsius does it lose per hour?
Yeah.
And now it has to all of a sudden try to heat all of that water again.
Correct.
At 6 o'clock at night when I arrive home. You know, and that's a spike again on the grid. It's a spike again for me for that. It takes a lot of energy to heat
that
150 liters or 200 liters water in the geezer. So, you know, whereas if I could have something that I could monitor it throughout the day and set certain settings so that it keeps the temperature there, maintain the temperature, and then just like increase slightly before I get home.
Well, I think also, I mean, broadly speaking, if you look at the retail tariff plan going forward, I mean, we've all heard about HomeFlex and, you know, the plans around people that have installed solar PV will be paying, you know, the fixed charge every month, and there'll also be different tariffs that will be introduced at different times of the day. So if you heat your water during peak hours, you're going to pay a lot more. Mm. So you have an incentive now, and it's quite simple to do. You do it from your smart device, is to schedule your heating pattern outside of the peak, which will make you save even more money, right? I mean, the difference that I understand is between 5 rand a kilowatt hour versus 3 rand a kilowatt hour is enormous. If you're going to heat your water at 6, 7, 8 in the morning, and you've got a double peak, of course, in winter as well. So it makes perfect sense for the consumer. I don't want to say it's a no-brainer because there's a cost involved, but the payback period for a product like this can be 8, 9, 10 months, depending on your usage.
It
pays itself off in a very short space of time. So the difference between this and maybe a solar system, and again, we sell solar, so I'm not advocating not to look at a solar system. It depends what your needs are, is that you pay this back far, far quicker.
Yeah, and from there, it's only savings.
Correct.
You know, the first time it balances out in what you initially pay to have it installed. But after that, once it's paid itself off, yeah. then it's only saving. And you can take that money and apply it to somewhere Absolutely. Else.
100%. I mean, and then I said earlier as well, that's more on the consumer side, but how do we work to help government? What benefit could government get out of this potentially? Mm-hmm. So I don't know if you've read in the press, but Eskom has announced they need 14,000 kilometers of new transmission lines. at a cost of 390 billion rand, they've touted that figure in the press. So it's not something that can be done just through government. There will certainly be a need for private and public participation or partnerships in this case. I bring that up because if we are going to grow this economy, we need more transmission lines. Mm. There's, of course, the Just Energy Transition Plan that government is driving as well to change how we generate electricity. So obviously wind and solar, et cetera, and gas will become part of the energy landscape in the next 10, 20 years in a much larger scale. But I think at the end of the day, it all comes back to the fact that if we are going to get this economy to 3, 4, 5%, there will still be strain on the grid. A product like this can help to alleviate that strain on the grid. Because let me give you an example. Out of that 5 million geysers, if we took 1 million or 20% off and made them into smart, I mean, the saving is enormous. It's the same as building a new power station for 50 billion rand at one-tenth of the price of that, you know, Willem. So it becomes really impactful financially, commercially at a macro level. So, you know, 1.7 gigawatt power station just with 1 million geysers. I mean, Minister Ramaphosa was in the press a couple of years ago in 2023, and he was talking about this behavioral change. Remember, 23 was when we had the stage six and everybody was really not having a great time, right? And he said, through making a singular change, a big change, like heating water, we essentially could basically reduce the power output to such an extent that it would be the same as having a Medupi power station. That's at peak consumption, of course, if all the geysers were on it at peak heating. Now, think of that. Medupi power station is a massive power station.
Exactly.
So we don't want to go to that extent and say all 5 million should be converted. But if you just take 20% of the 5 million installation,
You already have that impact.
I mean, that's almost two stages of load shedding, the way that we understood it over the last couple of years. It's meaningful.
Yeah.
It also means that for government, where fiscal finances are super stretched at the moment, it makes sense, right?
Yeah.
This is far cheaper to deploy a technology like this than building.
And take the capital to invest, because we need that capital first before we can build those things and put in the lines.
And the other cost as well for the consumer, going back to the consumer again, is just if you're going to put in gas or solar or whatever new type of technology, there's that installation capital cost that you've got to pay as well.
Yeah.
And it's great for the plumbers and installers that are in that space, because obviously they make a cost off the labor. But for the typical homeowner, to put a new gas installation in is quite pricey.
Yeah.
And the same for solar as well, if you're converting as well. So here in the mass market, there's not a need to do an expensive conversion. So there is that cost reduction for a consumer that's already stretched to the limit in this country.
I think it makes sense. Kit.
Correct.
Yeah. Correct. But listen, talking about retrofitting it, I think as all good things always run out of time. Time is we can never replace time, eh? Like we can save on energy, we can never save on
taxes,
time.
Sir. We're not going to get away from taxes either.
I'm excited to see the presentation you're going to do for us, Brandon. So I think what we can do is we can close off now this conversation, and then we can set up and quickly do the demonstration, and then we can come back and do a proper closing of the of this episode. I'm quite excited.
Great. Thank you, Willem. Thank you very much.
Brandon, so it's time to show your magic, né?
Hopefully.
I love this part because it's like the Americans, when they have in their school, they've got what they call the show and tell. It's all yours. I'm going to give you the stage.
Okay.
So tell us about that Geyser Connect, the floor is yours.
So essentially this kit is really cool in the sense that you can convert a mechanical geyser into something that's now electronic and smart for the customer. And I hope that I can demonstrate to the plumbers how easy it is to install the kit.
Especially because we said it's a retrofit kit, né?
Correct.
That's cool. So it means it's not much effort to, doesn't need to change the whole contraption, put in a new geyser or whatever. An existing geyser in the roof can also take it.
100%.
Lekker, show us.
Okay, so as with any installation, the first step is to switch off power at the DB board. Once you know your DB board's power is off, you'd go to your isolator switch off power there, and then you'd start by opening up your flange cover. Okay? So when you open up your flange cover, you would then take out your thermostat that is currently there, and assuming that there's already a connection there. Okay, before that, you could check with your multimeter. There's no power on the thermostat. Then obviously you remove your live and neutral cable, and then you would get these two rings with the kit, okay? So this ring is for mounting on the water heater, in which case would be a horizontal installation, okay? In the case of a vertical installation, we do recommend that you install the kit away from the water heater. So in that case, this would be mounted on a wall or on a roof truss, okay? So for this demonstration, let me use the horizontal installation because that's a more prominent installation in South Africa. You take your adapter ring and it fits snugly in a bayonet fitting onto the flange cover. So once you've got that in place, you would use your screwdriver and then mount that ring snugly in place. Just gotta get the screw. Okay. Okay, so that fits in nice. It's really a good connection. This connection is IPX4 tested, so it's splash proof.
Oh, nice.
The next step is you would use this thermal cutout that's provided with the kit. It's pretty cool. It's branded in red for Ariston as well. So
obviously.
Good marketing job, yeah. You would then push this into the thermostat. You've got that in. Okay, you check that connection. You loosen your cables. Okay. Now that you've got that in place, the next step would be to remove the kit itself. Okay, and this is the kit, how it would look. You have your live, neutral, and earth cables. Okay, and these then would be mounted to your thermostat.
Oh, nice. Okay.
So for the purpose of this demonstration, I'm not going to do that to save us time. But that's pretty simple, straightforward connection that you would do. Once that's done, you take the sensor cable. So this senses the temperature. And you push it through the conduit. That's there. Struggle to get that in. Just use a screwdriver.
Must make it look difficult for the plumbers now, eh?
Yeah. The problem is always the designers sit behind desks. Okay, so once you've got all of your cables connected, you would then connect the entire unit to this bayonet fitting, and it's a pretty cool fitting because it locks in place.
So it's a twist and lock?
Yeah.
So that part is easy enough. I see there are a couple of other cables here as well.
Yeah. Okay, that's now in place. Okay, so you would then connect your cable to the PCB. That clips in nicely. Okay, then in no particular order, these are two of your sensors. This is a leakage sensor. So this will be able to detect if there is a leakage in your geyser.
I think let's show it to the, if you could just position yourself over there, then we can show it to our close-up camera in that side. What do they do, Brandon?
So this is essentially a resistor that is able to detect if there's water. So this is a very unique design in the sense that you could lift it up and down to position how sensitive the device is to water. And this actually gives feedback to the PCB to tell the system if there is a leakage. If there's a leakage, the end user will get a message immediately. And that, as Wayne was alluding to earlier, that kind of early warning system is really where the value is for plumbers and for service centers.
But yes, exactly. And it's not only about the loss of water. Yes, we as much as we need to preserve energy and electricity in South Africa, and reduce our demand, therefore, and save on it, the same needs to be done with water as well. So, yes, it's 100%. About the loss of water. If there's a leakage,
But at the same time, it's about the damage that it causes, because correct. Many geysers sit in a roof cavity. Correct. So again, that leakage can cause damage for your ceilings. It can cause damage to the plaster against your brick walls and those kind of things. So the earlier you can detect a leak, the better. And how cool is it that this product actually comes with a leak sensor?
And so essentially, this leak sensor sends a signal to the PCB. And then the PCB sends a signal both to the customer on his application on the phone and also a signal to close this shutoff valve. Mm. So I'm going to get to the shutoff valve in a bit, but let me just show you how you install this. So this goes to the PCB. And then from the PCB, you can actually connect this to the outlet drain on the drip tray. So the moment that you have any leakage on the water heater, it would sense the leakage in the drip tray.
Nice. So,
that's pretty cool. This is your shutoff valve, okay? So this you would need to install after the pressure control valve, and then you would connect this to your PCB, okay? So I'm just going to show you.
So if it detects, so you can then shut off your water supply to the geyser?
Correct. The leakage sensor, the moment it detects a water leakage, it would send a signal to shut this valve off. And to send an alert message to the customer.
All right. And from there, from the app, they can then also, not only does it turn off the water supply to stop that leakage from happening, but also they can turn off the electricity supply to this.
Correct.
If there's no water supply to it, that pressure building up, etc., if it continues to stay on connected to the electricity.
Correct.
That's pretty cool. Yeah.
And, in that case, you prevent also your element from potentially burning out.
Yes, exactly. Nice.
So you'd take this, connect it to your printed circuit board. Okay, so that's what's in snug. Okay, then there's another cool sensor. Well, I think it's cool. This is a sensor that can sense the outlet temperature of your water heater. So this you would literally mount on your copper pipe, on the outlet pipe, and then connect it back to your printed circuit board. So this really gives the back end the opportunity to see what is the customer set temperature on his app, what is the physical temperature in the water heater near the element, and what is the temperature at the outlet as well. So those feedback mechanisms are really useful in troubleshooting if there is any potential issue with the water heater.
Well, the fact is the client may think to themselves, all right, so I can set a lower temperature so that there's lower consumption, energy consumption, because I've set the temperature lower. But now at the end of the day, there's a much lower temperature coming out of my tap when I open the tap.
Correct.
And they can actually monitor that through that sensor.
Correct, correct.
Nice.
I mean, that also gives feedback, again, if there's no water in the water heater and, you know, you're heating this up to 60 degrees here, but you're actually seeing 20 degrees there, you know, there's something wrong. So it really provides a platform for analysts to give more feedback without actually being in the ceiling.
But again, it boils down to the fact that it's not only saving mechanism, but also a prevention mechanism.
Correct.
Oh, that's cool. So lekker. Who would have thought plumbers working with technology like this, eh? I always say to family and friends who are not in the plumbing industry, I always say to them, don't underestimate plumbing and the trade of plumbing, because they work with very intricate and complex technology.
100%. 100%. And Willem, I think that is basically it. Yeah. I don't know how long that was, but
that's cool.
I think for me, if I was installing this, I could get this done in 10 minutes maybe.
Yeah. And I mean, 10 minutes... Yes, there's that initial cost of installing it, but in the end, it repays itself off in a couple of months' time, and from there on, it's only savings.
100%.
Oh, Brandon, thanks a stack.
No problem.
We're going to go close this episode off now, but it's always good for the plumbers to actually see the product that we are talking about. Awesomeness. Thanks, Brandon.
Thanks so much.
Lekker, Brandon, thanks for that. I always say that's why it's so awesome to have this a video element to this podcast, so that people can actually see what we're talking about, and for them to have seen and for you to have explained every single part of this and how it fits together and the purpose that it fills and the impact that it has.
Absolutely.
Was lucky to physically see that presentation. So thanks for that.
Thanks, thanks for the opportunity.
I feel in the presence of greatness when I say that I have a research and development engineer, the person behind...
It makes two of us.
It's the person behind the initiative, the person behind thinking of absolutely how can we improve on things. I mean, that's why it's called research and development. It's always improving on things because we need, especially in our country, we need improvement and solutions.
I can tell you just very briefly, I have such a newfound respect. Not that I didn't have respect for Brandon before, but in terms of the amount of time invested in something like this, the amount that I've learned as well through engaging with Brandon on a project like this, we don't realize, you know, we see products out there, you know, finished products, and we think, oh, well, yeah, it's just a finished product.
Yep.
The amount of work that goes into it, the foresight, and the trials and tribulations. It's not so simple. There's a lot of refinement that goes on, you know, under the bonnet here, you know, so to speak. And price is normally a good indication as well. You know, they always say you can – generally, you can tell the quality of a product by the price. And the product packaging is also quite interesting, you know, as well, you know. So I think in this case, we've done a great job. And Brandon and his team really have done, done a tremendous job, along with the Sensor Networks team as well. Some really good people there.
100%.
Wayne, before we close off, and we have run out of time, so we're going to have to close up this and wrap up this episode, as interesting as the conversation is. There are a couple of things that I want to ask you about, like after-sales services and what it is on your products.
Yes.
There's something very specific that I'd like to tell you to tell the our audience of plumbers specifically.
Sure.
Is the My Ariston Rewards. But before we get there, there was something that we...
Yes.
We might have omitted from our conversation is that you were already you were speaking to some of the insurers as well. If you don't mind sharing that information, is that we spoke about putting in a solution to maintain the less load shedding that we currently have and to reduce the demand off of the grid and to obviously then save customers money on spending and consumption at the end of the day. But the fact is, we know that you know, many of the insurers say that they've got a policy of we replace like for like, and that sometimes might prohibit the installer, the technician, our plumbers, to say, but wait a minute, instead of replacing like with like, we can take this solution and offer it to you. But you said you were in conversations there with...
I'm sure you agree, Willem. I think there should be fair value for everybody. Nothing for nothing in this world, especially in the business environment. So what I mean by that is that we provide something that has incredible benefits for all the stakeholders, not just for ourselves. So this shouldn't just be something that Ariston enjoys the benefit. Yes, we're in business for profit. But the idea here is that our other stakeholders, like the insurance partners, can get a direct benefit by saving on the consequential damages that often happen when a geyser springs a leak. The term burst is quite interesting to me, but a geyser leaks.
Yes,
you know, if it springs a leak or, you know, electrical component fails, with this particular product here, especially on the water damages side, it makes a massive difference to the insurer. The data that we have a large data set from the 12,000 that have been installed, it can reduce the consequential damages by 90%.
Oh.
Which is high. It's something very valuable for the insurers.
That's damages to ceilings. That's damages to plaster against brick walls and those kind of things.
Not to mention the homeowner's frustration. I mean, it's a super inconvenience for all of us. We've all been through something like that where a geyser leaks. You know, then you got to wait for a couple of hours for somebody to come out, have a look. And then if it's consequential damages of note, it's not a day job, right? So you've got to repaint walls and ceilings and all kinds of stuff. So I think from a customer experience point of view, I think it'll make a huge difference to the end consumer. Definitely.
Awesome. Value. It's the value offering that it brings to the table.
Absolutely.
Quickly tell us about after-sales services, technical advice, like training that you may provide wherever, you know, whether it's through industry, plumbing industry bodies or on your own.
Excellent. Great.
And then warranties as well on the products.
Perfect. It's great timing that we're having the podcast because what's happened is we've just done like a bit of a white box solution in our training facility that some of the plumbers will be familiar with. And we essentially are now going to go to the market in the next couple of months with a training academy.
Oh, nice.
It'll be of a very good level. We've also got a new person that's joined our new asset, because human beings are assets, who'll be joining us as a product specialist as well, and we'll be doing training. So we're going to partner with the likes of yourselves and all the other industry bodies to really accelerate the message, not just around this product, but everything that we do as well. I think it's a watershed moment for the water heating market, in that the time is now.
Yes.
To provide the right products, the right solutions.
Yes.
You know, this is a platform as a service offering is something quite new to the market as well. It's been around. We're maybe not the first in terms of, you know, sensor networks and themselves. There are other people that do this as well. It's the first time we can take this and really scale it. Because the benefit, again, is not just for ourselves. It's for everybody. We need a whole of society change to minimize the energy crisis. So back to training. For sure, in the next couple of months, I'll give you an update as soon as we're ready to go live. We'll do a big announcement about that. So I'm very excited about that. And then I think as well, on after-sales service, we've made massive improvements over the last 2-3 years. We've got a BPO, a business processing and outsourcing company, that we use for our frontline calls. And we maintain a 97% to 98% pickup rate in the first 30 seconds.
Yes.
So not to talk out of house, you know, there's some of these things we like to keep under wraps as corporates, but that's a huge improvement to where we were. I think the customer experience, whoever the person is that's making contact with us, is getting a first-rate service today. The company that we utilize as well does a lot of emergency services work. So their systems always have to be online. They can't have downtime for obvious reasons. And we get the benefit of that. So I think the frontline calls support center is brilliant now. Really, I don't think it was our strong point a couple of years ago. But we've made that improvement. We've got about 80 service center network partners around the country as well, Southern Africa actually, not just South Africa. We mustn't lose focus on the BNLS countries, so Botswana, Namibia, Lesotho, Eswatini. And we believe we can grow those markets as well. And with that growth, you've got to be able to support it, of course.
Yes.
You know, it's very important. Easy to sell anything, you know. Not so easy to support it if you're not geared. And that's that's really what we're passionate about.
Then lastly, the lacquer one, the one that I found in the industry. I was at a plumber's evening about a month ago.
Yes.
I heard about some astonishing things about how people, the rewards that they're getting from the MyAriston, and I think there was one plumber who even said that they get so much rewards back on their MyAriston that they can actually pay for their annual holiday.
He's not lying. No, I can tell you it's the industry's first and only so far rewards program for the plumbers. You know, we're passionate about the plumbers. I mean, at the end of the day, they do an incredible job out there. You know, and I think we'll do anything we can to, within reason, of course, to support the plumbers. You know, times are tough out there. To be able to get an extra incentive for getting rewarded now for doing your work and hopefully doing it as best as you can for us is really critical. So we stand for the professionals. MyAriston is a rewards program that is very simple to use. On our water heaters, there's a scratch code. Basically, the plumber has to register himself, and then he basically redeems that code online. Very simple, very quick to do. And when he gets to the first 1,000 points, which is 500 Rand, he gets a debit card shipped to him. And from there, he can keep earning. So it's a very, very easy system to use. We've got quite a few plumbers on there.
Sure.
Thousands. So it's a really great way of giving back to the plumbers, I think. And also, it's a nice way to communicate with people as well.
Yes.
You know, as well. Because at the end of the day, our roles in this whole chain is to add value to everybody. But the big thing we can do is to educate and upskill people.
Oh, that's...
I think it's super critical.
Yeah. I mean, that's one of the reasons why we're having this podcast is because that's how passionate we feel, the Plumbing Industry Registration Board, about educating people, informing them, increasing their knowledge and taking them forward. As things evolve, they need to stay up to date and stay abreast.
So, I mean, we do numerous events where we have the, you know, the typical gazebo day, and we brass some bottle wash rolls, and, you know, we engage with the plumbers, and then we'll start with the MyAriston, because, you know, it is a bit of the hook, right? You show somebody, listen, you can earn some extra money. But what we do successfully at those events, and I think you've seen numerous of them, is the fact that we're able to stop people, let them pause for a second, do the registration. If they're not registered, that's quick. It's not so much about that. That's the hook to get them to stop, is to speak to them about product and installation and how important it is to broaden their horizons. Because there's numerous products that we as a company have brought in over the years that can only benefit everybody in the chain. So I think it's an evolutionary process that we're trying to develop. We're not trying to revolutionize the market, but we can make some subtle changes to the market. And this is a very valuable asset that we can deploy to get people aware of different types of product typologies. I'll give you a quick example. A gas geyser today, if you buy one as a plumber, or as an installer, as a gas installer, you get 250 Rand reward.
Sure.
It's meaningful.
Yeah.
The reason why we're doing it is, of course, to create the brand awareness, but also to promote correct installation practices as well. And that's more on the LP gas side. And the same with the products that we've brought in the water heating side, like the Andrus Lux. They all attract a point or a Rand value. And we've seen that growth has been astronomical because the plumber's taking the time now to essentially take the time to sell the product in a meaningful way to the end user.
Oh, that's lekker.
Good.
Lastly, we've come to an end. We need to close it off. Just a quick one. Obviously, they're going to be of our viewers and our listeners who are going to say, I want more information, website, telephone number, email address where they can get support.
Absolutely, yeah. So the best thing to do is to visit our website, you know, to see what products we have. So www.ariston.com. Otherwise, give us a call as well. Our numbers are on the website, but 010-745-9910.
Awesome.
That's for Ariston.
Awesome.
I'll give you Brandon's email address as well. No,
his personal telephone number.
He loves doing sales.
Yeah.
I don't do technical. He doesn't do sales. But essentially we available to all of the different stakeholders. And then the Sensor Network specific kit is available for viewing and for more information on their website as well.
And obviously more information about My Ariston and those.
Yes, kind of all of that will be on our local website link, basically, can be accessed from different resources we have on the website. So give it a try. Go and visit www.ariston.com.
Wayne, and product availability, where can they find major stores, the major retailers and supply stores?
Very good question. As of the 1st of August, the product is now readily available throughout the market through all the trusted normal merchants. And we expect quite a few of the smaller merchants will also consider this product because of the value that it can unlock for everybody in the chain. So, your bigger merchants for sure, almost immediately, but for sure, this product needs to be everywhere. There's 5 million geezers out there.
The more independent stores.
The more independent stores is very critical to the overall health of this project itself. So we stand for plumbers and we stand for all the store partners because a geezer is it's a bit like a loaf of bread. You know, it's got to be on every shelf. It's got to be everywhere. So we look forward to this. And Willem, I just wanted to thank you from my side and Brandon's side, really, for the opportunity. You're super positive to take hands going forward on all the various projects that we have. So thank you for all the hard work you guys do as well.
I can continue this conversation for hours.
Likewise.
I get so passionate about these things and the innovation that comes into our industry and the stuff that plumbers, that they can just expand their own type of services and the solutions that they can provide. But thank you to the two for your time and your effort. It's been a couple of hours since you've been at the studio because we had an off-air conversation. Thank you. And I think that we should do this again, maybe in
Absolutely.
One of the other types of products, maybe
Good.
on your decentralized
products could be something interesting. We also have got some exciting renewable products coming soon.
Awesome.
In the next couple of months. So maybe we'll use that opportunity to come and showcase them with you as well. I won't say much more. It's under wraps, but we'll come and chat to you when we're ready.
Wayne, Brandon, thanks.
Thank you, Willem.
We'll do this again.
Appreciate
Thank
it.
Thank you so much.
Ciao.